Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 226, an update on German corporate control over American publishing and other media. Due to the fact that this is a continuing series and there is a great deal of underlying documentation, I'm not going to be able to fill in all of the ancillary information to the satisfaction of newer listeners. So please note that the other broadcasts in this series are numbers 122, 123, 152, Side A, 177, 189, 194, 218, and 224, and there will no doubt be others. This all, that is to say, all the information you're about to hear, is to be viewed against the background of the Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the economic component, literally, of a Third Reich gone underground. It is what one banker described as the most important concentration of money power under a single control in all of world history. And in turn, the control of American broadcasting. It will be focusing largely on a company called Bertelsmann. That is a company that was presided over during the Third Reich by Heinrich Mohn of the SS. And its house historian, in 1998, republished a book that described World War II as having been produced by Franklin Roosevelt, American Imperialism, Jewish Control over the American Media, and that book basically exonerated Hitler for responsibility. The available evidence suggests very strongly that Bertelsmann, like other major German corporations, including von Holtzbrinck, is associated with the Bormann Group and the Underground Reich. Now, recapping some information that we looked at in both 194 and in 224, an article from the New York Times of Sunday, January 30th, by Doreen Carvajal, C-A-R-V-A-G-A-L, about Bertelsmann chief executive Thomas Middelhoff, is entitled Leading Bertelsmann's Race to the Future. This talks about Bertelsmann's capital policy, which has, for a period of years, been aimed at obtaining a 15% return on net capital assets, or on total capital employed. Reading quickly, historically, the decisive measure of success or failure for Bertelsmann's companies has been a formula that some of its American executives call the Holy Grail, but in German is rendered Gesamtkapitalrendite, the return on assets or on total capital employed. For almost two decades, the rate has been set at 15%, a value established by Reinhard Mohn, a fourth-generation descendant of the company's founder. Then it talks about the fact that that figure has been reduced in order to free up $10 billion for purchasing other companies, but please note that Bertelsmann is in an excellent position capital-wise with regard to other companies, particularly American companies, which are in debt despite the fact that their stocks have soared. Now, updating Bertelsmann from the past week, we're going to take a look at the business section of the New York Times from Monday, April 17th of the year 2000. This also is an article by Doreen Carvajal. Its headline, Superstore's Online Unit Seeks Stability. Now, this is about BarnesandNoble.com. That is 50% owned by Bertelsmann. And of Bertelsmann and the aforementioned Thomas Middelhoff, we read about BarnesandNoble.com. When asked to evaluate the partnership, Bertelsmann's chief executive Thomas Middelhoff declined to comment about BarnesandNoble.com or the search for a new chief executive. He is one of three Bertelsmann executives on the board of BarnesandNoble.com with a personal investment of more than $500,000 that he made at the time the stock was selling for $18 a share. By the way, it's selling for much less than that now. In the past, Mr. Middelhoff has lavished praise on the online bookstore's financial progress, which for the quarter that ended in December reported sales of $82 million, more than double the amount for the comparable period a year earlier. Its annual sales for 1999 were $203 million, up from $62 million in 1998. Skipping down, Leonard Reggio, the chief executive of Barnes & Noble Incorporated, commented, Leonard Reggio said that this same alliance also offered an explanation why morale issues did not plague BarnesandNoble.com as much as other e-commerce companies. Employees, he said, know Barnes & Noble and Bertelsmann are not going anywhere. So please note that long-term employee stability is being enhanced by the partnership of Barnes & Noble and Bertelsmann. And I would also note that BarnesandNoble.com has been gaining on Amazon. Once again, reading from this article, the analysts who cover BarnesandNoble.com generally recommend its stock and say the company is steadily chipping away at its arch-rival's market share. Mr. Rowan of Prudential said that he was impressed with the online bookseller's progress, noting that its share of the combined book revenues for BarnesandNoble.com and Amazon grew to 19% in its most recent quarter, up from 16% in the previous quarter. Recall that there was a recent IPO for BOL.com, Bertelsmann's own online company, and that predictions were made by the head of that particular subsidiary that this IPO would give them the number one position in online book sales around the world, except for the U.S., where BarnesandNoble.com is number two, Amazon is number one, but again, BarnesandNoble.com is 50% owned by Bertelsmann. Now, note that there was reference in that particular story to looking for a new chief executive. Also note that Bertelsmann's very favorable capital position and their alliance with another large corporation, Barnes & Noble, makes BarnesandNoble.com a relatively good prospect. Many people are recommending its stock, and its combined share of online book revenues has been growing. Returning to a work that we've dealt with before, this is a book called Serpent's Walk, published by National Vanguard Books. That is the publishing arm of the National Alliance, the most important domestic Nazi group. This book, like another book published by National Vanguard Books, The Turner Diaries, I believe to be far more than the novel it purports to be. I believe that it's a blueprint for what I call the Underground Reich is doing and will be doing. The Turner Diaries, of course, was the role model for Timothy McVeigh and company, as well as for the Nazi group The Order. On the back cover, this book is described as the takeover in the mid-21st century by the descendants of the SS. They are described, quote, as behaving in the following fashion. Their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans, who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote. And I'm going to read a passage from this book that I've read many times before. This is a discussion of two of the Nazi faithful named Lessing and Wrench. What they're talking about is a reference to what any knowledgeable observer would recognize as the Bormann Organization and its buying into the American opinion-forming media. Now, bear in mind, this book is supposed to be a novel. As I've said before, I believe it is far more than a novel. This excerpt from Serpent's Walk that we've heard many times reads, "About 10 years ago, we swung a merger, a takeover, and got voting control of a super corporation that runs a small but significant chunk of the American media. Not openly, not with bands and trumpets or swastikas flying, but quietly. One huge corporation cuddling up to another one and gently munching it up like a great gubbing amoeba. Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there." Note the gently cuddling up, one huge corporation gently cuddling up to another. We've been looking at Bertelsmann and other corporations gently cuddling up to one another. Note the Barnes & Noble and Bertelsmann cuddling up. We're going to take a look at a lot of other cuddling up by Bertelsmann, as well as the von Holtzbrinck firm later on in the program. Note the following, however. Note that after this cuddling up process, again, reprising from Serpent's Walk, "Since then, we've been replacing executives, pushing somebody out here, bringing somebody else in there." Note what's going on now at BarnesandNoble.com after Bertelsmann bought 50% of the stock. Turning once again to the New York Times of Monday, April 17th of the year 2000, this Doreen Carvial story reads in part as follows, once again skipping down of BarnesandNoble.com. "And while it hunts for a new chief to replace the three that came before, the second-ranked online bookstore is also coping with an exodus of employees." Note that they're looking for a new chief executive officer. And note something else, again, skipping down in this same story. "Last summer, the company's chief technology officer, John Christie, left for the same position at Online Retail Partners in New York. Online Retail has recruited more than 25 former BarnesandNoble.com employees who now work in almost every department from senior management and production to technology and development. Another wave, about 12 departures, followed Robert Dykman, DYKMAN's shift in March from Vice President of Technical Infrastructure at BarnesandNoble.com to Saks Direct, where he also became chief technology officer. Certainly a lot of executives have been leaving BarnesandNoble.com. Whether they've been in fact being replaced or pushed out here and replaced by Bertelsmann remains to be determined. But there is an unnerving similarity between what's going on in Serpent's Walk and what's going on in real life, as I've noted before. Another fascinating story, another fascinating aspect of this particular article, once again, New York Times of April 17th of the year 2000, notes the cuddling up process that I've spoken about before. Now, in For the Record program number 224, we took a look at the growing association between Bertelsmann and the Pearson Corporation. Pearson PLC, as we looked at in an article from the New York Times of Monday, April 3rd, this is an AP story, Dateline London headline, Pearson will buy Dorling Kindersley in $496 million deal. I'm not going to read the article, but it noted that Pearson PLC is the largest educational publisher in the world, and that its main publishing arm, its main trade publishing arm, is Penguin Books. I noted in the past that Penguin was the co-defendant with Deborah Lipstadt in the David Irving lawsuit. That was a lawsuit which basically aimed at substantiating Irving's Holocaust denial. He lost, but I would note that Pearson and Bertelsmann are cuddling up. The Financial Times of London is owned by Pearson, and Financial Times Deutschland is a joint venture with the Bertelsmann company. That's discussed in the Financial Times of April 8th and April 9th of the year 2000 in an article by James Harding entitled Joint Transmission. This article also discusses the joint television venture between Pearson and Bertelsmann that creates the largest television company in Europe, and they're now aiming at the U.S. market. That's discussed at considerable length in programs number 218 and 224. I would also note that, again, this is the second joint venture between Bertelsmann and Pearson. This article by James Harding from the Financial Times can be excerpted, or it is excerpted, as follows, reprising from number 224. Perhaps the ultimate question for many investors is whether this deal means Pearson and Bertelsmann are moving inexorably together. The two companies now work together not only in television, but also on Financial Times Deutschland, a joint venture newspaper in Germany. Skipping down, the heads of two of Europe's leading media companies appear content with an informal alliance. That is for the time being. Note also another cuddling up here, going back to the New York Times of Monday, April 17th of the year 2000. Barnes & Noble, as part of its online presence, bear in mind BarnesandNoble.com, 50% owned by Bertelsmann, beginning again, Barnes & Noble, as part of its online presence, has a business tie to the New York Times, selling books through links from the newspaper's website. Still more cuddling up. Note that when these companies cuddle up, it places them in a position to influence each other's content. Note here that we have Bertelsmann cuddling up to the Financial Times, to Pearson, to Penguin Books through Pearson, the largest educational publisher in the world, and also the publisher of the Deborah Lipstadt book, which was the focal point of the David Irving Holocaust denial lawsuit. I would note that Bertelsmann's chief historian, as recently as 1998, I aired in number 218 and 224. I said it recently as 1993. Dirk Bovendam, the house historian of Bertelsmann, published a book that blamed World War II on American imperialism, Franklin Roosevelt, Jewish control over the American media, and basically exonerated Hitler. That was only 2 years ago, as I'm speaking on April 23rd of the year 2000. If people think this sort of revision of history that David Irving has aimed at unsuccessfully, and that Serpent's Walk projects successfully for the middle of the next century is impossible, well, stick around. More cuddling up. This from the New York Times of Wednesday, April 19th of the year 2000. This is another article by Doreen Carvajal. This is called An Upstart Upsets the Old Book Cart. This is about a company called Alibris, A-L-I-B-R-I-S. It is the number one online seller of used books. And that, by the way, would include Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, the largest, the definitive work on the Bormann Flight Capital Organization. This article about Alibris reads as follows, and guess who's cuddling up to a Libras. Skipping down in the story, the privately held online seller of used books has Wall Street ambitions, Silicon Valley money, and a strategy that is roiling one of the last bastions of the book market, where small dealers still hold sway. And again, see if you can guess who's cuddling up, unquote, to a Libras. Skipping down in the article, BarnesandNoble.com struck a supply partnership with a Libras earlier this year. And skipping down again, some independent dealers fear that a Libras is moving to create a monopoly, a fear that was intensified by some recent sharp internet-style elbowing for space. In early March, BarnesandNoble.com alerted antiquarian dealers that it had struck a new partnership with a Libras to fill its used book orders. BarnesandNoble.com, of course, 50% owned by Bertelsmann. More cuddling up. And again, this is from the same week, the same week's news. The Wall Street Journal of Friday, April 21st of the year 2000, carried the following story by Martin Peers, P-E-E-R-S. This is headlined, Talks Held on Merging Record Clubs at State Line, New York, and it reads in part as follows. Now note, this deal is not complete and is viewed as being possibly completed quite some time down the road. Nonetheless, note the cuddling up and note who's involved. This reads in part as follows. German media giant Bertelsmann AG and Time Warner Incorporated have had preliminary discussions about merging Bertelsmann's BMG Direct Record Club with Columbia House, the record and video club half-owned by Time Warner, people familiar with the matter say. And skipping down, Columbia House, long the dominant record club, has particularly suffered as BMG Direct has adopted more aggressive marketing tactics in recent years. Of the two clubs, Columbia House is the biggest with 16 million members, although much of its business comes from video sales that BMG Direct, with 11 million members, doesn't offer. And skipping down, BMG Direct accounted for about 20% of BMG's North American revenue of $2 billion last year, according to a person familiar with the situation. And about previous successful cuddling up between Time Warner Incorporated, now the largest media conglomerate in the world, and Bertelsmann, the number three media conglomerate, we read as follows. This year, Time Warner and Bertelsmann joined forces in their book direct marketing business, merging Bertelsmann's Doubleday Direct Book Club with Time Warner's Book of the Month Club. That venture was prompted in part by the impact of web completion, executives said at the time. So note that BMG Direct and Columbia House, the two largest record or CD of the month clubs, now talking about merging, this following damage done to Columbia House's sales figures by BMG Direct, which accounts for 20% of BMG Entertainment's North American revenue. More cuddling up. This about yet another BMG deal that we talked about in number 224. This was an agreement with Sony to begin the first online marketing of CDs. This to compare with MP3 online pirating of CDs. Now note the cuddling up that BMG is doing here. New York Times of Monday, April 17th of the year 2000, the same business section on the same day as the previous article about BarnesandNoble.com by Doreen Carvajal. This is an article, actually a column entitled New Economy. It's by Matt Richtel, R-I-C-H-T-E-L, subtitled The Big Recording Companies Might Be Able to Embrace Internet Sales If They Could Just Find the Right Technology. But notice how many software companies that BMG is cuddling up to with this deal that we talked about in 224. Take the statement from BMG, which focused on the fact that the company had selected a half dozen, count them, six different technology partners to put its music online and to protect it from pirates. Skipping down, its cuddling partners here. BMG announced it would make music available in three different copyright-protecting formats from three competing companies, IBM, Intertrust Technologies, and Microsoft. To process secure sales transactions, BMG chose to license competing technologies from Reciprocal and Digital World Services. So note the software companies being cuddled up to by Bertelsmann in this particular deal. Now, in the past, in connection with German corporate control over American publishing, we've spoken about the von Holtzbrinck Company. That, too, is a company that prospered under the Third Reich. George von Holtzbrinck joined a Nazi youth group in 1931, 2 years before Hitler came to power, and he joined the Nazi Party in May of 1933, just 2 months after Hitler came to power, or just a few months after Hitler came to power, and before there was any pressure to do so. Circumstantial evidence suggests once again that that von Holtzbrinck is tied with the Underground Reich. We're going to talk about that in a second. But note a pattern that I've discussed in the past, namely that German corporations work in concert with one another, rather like one armored division, say an SS armored division, working with a Wehrmacht infantry division, and in turn working with Luftwaffe units to destroy and occupy an enemy position. They work very much like units of a military organization. They do not work independently of one another as American corporations do. Rather, they function as part of a concerted effort at national conquest. It is simply economic and consequent political conquest rather than military and consequent political conquest. The New York Times of June 2nd of 1999 carried the following story by Edmund L. Andrews, datelined Frankfurt, June 1st. It's headlined, Dow Jones in Link with Germans as Rivalry Grows in Europe. Now note some cuddling up being done by the von Holtzbrinck firm. Hoping to fend off the Financial Times of London in continental Europe, Dow Jones and Company announced an alliance today with Germany's biggest daily newspaper. Under the deal, Dow Jones agreed to exchange a stake in the Wall Street Journal Europe for a stake in Handelsblatt, owned by Verlagsgruppe George von Holtzbrinck of Germany. The two newspapers plan to use each other's reporting, with each allowing the other to translate and publish its material on the same day. Dieter von Holtzbrinck, the head of von Holtzbrinck, says the following, quote, "It looks like a reaction, but it is really a coincidence," unquote. He said at a news conference here today. I would editorialize, I believe it's a conspiracy, not a coincidence or a reaction. Skipping down. Under the agreement, Holtzbrinck will acquire 49% of the Wall Street Journal Europe, while Dow Jones will acquire 22% of Handelsblatt. In addition, von Holtzbrinck is acquiring part of Dow Jones's minority stakes in a Czech publishing venture. So note that roughly half of Wall Street Journal Europe is going to be owned by von Holtzbrinck. Financial Times Deutschland, one of two enormous ventures between Pearson PLC and Bertelsmann. Pearson PLC, recall, the world's largest educational publisher, cuddling up like so many others with Bertelsmann. And recall that Penguin Books, their largest trade publishing arm, was the co-defendant with Deborah Lipstadt in the recent David Irving Holocaust denial lawsuit. We're going to reprise a section of an article that we have read before in this series. Research credit on this goes to a listener. This is from Vanity Fair magazine. This is an article by David Margolick, M-A-R-G-O-L-I-C-K. It's about von Holtzbrinck, and it's entitled The German Front, again from Vanity Fair, June of 1998. And describing the wartime activities and post-war activities and the Nazi sympathies of George von Holtzbrinck, apparently not eclipsed by the end of World War II, we read, German publisher Klaus Wagenbach has said that Holtzbrinck subsequently filled his sales force, subsequently means after World War II, with former Nazis who, because they were ostensibly barred from the book industry, could be had cheap, a charge that Holtzbrinck spokesperson Arno Mahlert denies. And listen to the following. Moreover, the man in charge of one of George's post-war magazines was a notorious former SS stormtrooper who had once worked for Joseph Goebbels. I will give you absolute confirmation of the exact identity of this man, but the evidence suggests very strongly, and it's a pretty good bet, that this notorious former SS stormtrooper who once worked for Joseph Goebbels, notorious in post-World War II Germany, is none other than Werner Naumann, the head of the Naumann coup attempt in 1953 that we looked at in RFA 37 and For the Record program number 180. We came back to that briefly, and the Naumann group briefly in number 224. And Werner Naumann was a prime functionary of the Bormann group and the Underground Reich. Of the background of Werner Naumann, Kevin Coogan, an author we've dealt with in the past, writes as follows in the book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International. Coogan, by the way, capital C-O-O-G-A-N. His Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International, published in softcover by Autonomedia Incorporated, copyright 1999. And Kevin writes as follows about Werner Naumann. Just 44 years old, that's in 1953, Naumann already had an impressive career inside the National Socialist Movement, which he had joined in 1928 at age 19. By 1933, he was an SA Major General. The SA, by the way, were the brown shirts, the stormtroopers. After getting a degree, Kevin then continues, in economics, he joined the Ministry of Propaganda in 1937 and became Goebbels' personal adjutant. After 3 years service in the Luftwaffe and the Waffen-SS, he returned to the propaganda ministry and in 1944 was named the youngest undersecretary in Hitler's regime. During the Russian siege of Berlin, he led a people's militia battalion, and in gratitude, Hitler appointed him to succeed Goebbels as minister of propaganda. And this is in all likelihood the individual, in fact, almost certainly the person employed by von Holtzbrinck to head up one of his post-war publications. And again, I will have absolute confirmation of that for you shortly. More about the Naumann Group and its role in the Middle East. The British particularly feared the Naumann Circle's astonishing influence in the Middle East. According to a March 1953 report by the non-sectarian Anti-Nazi League, Dr. Gustav Scheele, a Bruderschaft leader arrested with Naumann, maintained excellent ties to the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. German corporations wishing to do business in the Middle East and Africa first had to approach Naumann, Scheele, SS and Odessa leader Skorzeny, and the Grand Mufti. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem himself, SS, and the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. And again, note that Werner Naumann, in addition to being named to succeed Goebbels as propaganda minister, also served in the Waffen-SS. And Kevin Coogan quotes an article about the role of the Naumann Group in the Egyptian coup that overthrew King Farouk in 1952. And writing about that coup group and quoting from an Italian fascist publication, Kevin relates, "This shows an impressive and astounding picture of the perfect organization and the brilliant and dynamic activity of the agents of the neo-Nazi organization of Skorzeny and Martin Bormann, jointly with the secret headquarters of the Black International and the Internationale of Coups d'État, which is one of its names." So again, note who the individual was who in all likelihood, almost certainly, von Holtzbrinck had heading up one of its post-war organizations. Von Holtzbrinck cuddling up to the Wall Street Journal, as well as the many other corporate connections that I've spoken about. They are too numerous to name in the time awaiting the time left to us, but note that as these corporations cuddle up, even if there is no munching of the other corporation entirely, it leaves them in a position to influence the other publications, and that will control the future. That concludes segment 226. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.